The United Nations considers a war stopped even more important than a war won.
If our cities go down, in my opinion, our nation will go down.
You have to think about your dream and what you want to do.
All we were trying to do was just get music for all people.
The end of child labor, a 40-hour work week, the right for workers to bargain collectively, minimum wage, even the right to talk in a lunchroom. Just some of the rights that organized labor has fought for. Often the battle for these rights was long and tough and involved strikes. Sometimes strikes turned into fights. This week marks the 82nd anniversary of one of those important labor fights known as the Battle of the Running Bulls. It happened at GM's Fisher Body No. 2 plant in Flint. So let's go back 82 years as we say hello to the Michigan History Center's Rachel Clark. Rachel, set the stage for us. What was going on between GM and its workers in January 1937?
By January of 1937, Flint workers had been involved in what is now known as the Flint sit-down strike. It began the end of December of 36 and had been continuing on. And so the workers were trying to get the UAW recognized as a collective bargaining agent for themselves with General Motors.
So they wanted the UAW to speak for them. GM was not inclined to do that. So that sit-down strike, it was actually more than one plant, wasn't it? Because we had Fisher Body No. 1 and Fisher Body No. 2. So this was a big deal.
It was. It moved into multiple plants over the course of the entire strike.
So what happened on January 11th, 1937, when this Battle of the Running Bulls erupted?
Up until that point, things within the strike had been pretty calm, even boring. People who were involved in the strike had talked about just sitting around and not really doing much. But by the 11th, General Motors ordered the heat to the Fisher 2 building cut off and food supplies blocked at the gate. So the company was now looking back, it's pretty clear that General Motors at that point intended to take Fisher 2 back from the strikers. And so they turned off the heat and shut off all food access, taken ladders down that people had been using to bring supplies to the strikers. And then as people were starting to push through the gate to get to the building, company police were called in and Flint police were called in.
Okay, so that amped things up considerably then. When Flint police get called in, what happened? What did this battle look like?
So as Flint police come in, they arrive with tear gas guns, and they start firing tear gas into the plant and into the group of strike supporters that are outside of the plant. So the strikers inside the plant at this point open up the windows not only to get some air into the plant, but they start throwing things out of the windows. And some of the things they start throwing out are just these enormous steel hinges for cars, bottles, just whatever they can find. And they start throwing it out the window at the police. And this is the Flint police. By this time, General Motors, the company police, had retreated. And so they start throwing things out and the Flint police retreat, sort of collect themselves back up again, and then return again with more tear gas.
So this is this Battle of the Running Bulls is a riot in a sense.
Yes.
Who got hurt? How many got hurt or arrested?
When all is said and done, you've got 14 strikers and strike sympathizers who are hurt. Two spectators, who are just sort of people that were there, are wounded, along with 9 police officers. And some of these injuries come from gunshot wounds. Some of it is tear gas, responses to tear gas, and then getting hit with things being thrown out of the plant itself.
General Motors, I'm sure, made some calls to Michigan Governor Frank Murphy. What was the response from the governor and from the state of Michigan?
The governor's response, in my opinion, I think it's very interesting what he ends up doing. Keep in mind, Governor Murphy, by this point, he's newly elected. So it would be as if Governor Whitmer now had to respond to something like this as a newly elected governor. He is very pro-labor. Everybody knows that. That's not really a secret at that point. But he also owns stock in General Motors. So he has a lot of interest in this. So what he ends up doing, he does a couple of things. The first thing he does is he orders General Motors to turn the heat back on and allow food supplies back into the plant. And the second thing he does is he orders the mobilization of the Michigan State Police and the Michigan National Guard into Flint.
And what did he instruct the National Guard to do or not do?
This was a bit of a surprise to people. Based on National Guard movement in labor disputes in the past, the National Guard was always brought in to quell the strike or to quell the disturbance. And so people assumed the National Guard was going to go into Flint and remove the strikers from Fisher 2 and Fisher 1. But their orders from Murphy were essentially to just keep the workers and General Motors police and Flint police away from each other. So that way, peace would sort of ensue for long enough for General Motors and the strikers to sit down and come to some sort of agreement. So the National Guard was essentially sent in as peacekeepers in this point, which didn't make General Motors very happy. Because that their assumption was that the Guard was going to go in and end the strike for them.
So basically the state didn't take sides.
No, Governor Murphy did not. National Guard just went in and did their job. State police went in and did their job. And it worked in the end.
And what about President Franklin Roosevelt?
President Roosevelt actually ended up sending in some of his own labor people to try to figure out what was going on and try to come to some peaceful end of this. It's during the Depression. It was really starting to hit the economy pretty hard as General Motors stops producing cars. And so Roosevelt ends up sending in some of his own labor people to try to convince not only General Motors, but to sort of push Murphy into a particular, not a corner so much, but just to get him to do some things to bring this to a close.
So how did this all end and when did it end?
So in the end, the strike lasted until February 11th of 37. And because of the production shutdown, not only in Flint, but in other plants across the Midwest, General Motors production actually ended up almost coming to a complete halt. And so by February of 1937, General Motors agreed to recognize the UAW as a collective bargaining unit, and the strike came to an end.
And what changed for workers in their day-to-day life or in their pay?
A lot of the things they asked for are things that you would sort of expect. The speed of the line, they wanted that to slow down. But some of the stranger things, they were allowed now to speak together in the cafeteria. Before, they weren't allowed to talk at their lunch breaks, but they can now. And they also get a 5% raise, which during the Depression era, that's a sizable increase. So they ended up getting about a dozen requests out of this.
And I've got to ask, and maybe nobody knows the answer, how did this battle get the name the Battle of the Running Bulls?
The thing that I have heard is because bull is used sometimes as a term for police or even hired police, and because they did retreat, they used the play on the Battle of the Running Bulls as the police retreating and the victory of the strikers. But I don't know that that's true. I've just read that in various spots.
Rachel Clark with the Michigan History Center, taking us back to a very important moment in labor history, the Battle of the Running Bulls, 82 years ago this week, outside the GM Fisher Body Plant No. 2 in Flint. Rachel, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.